6:30 almost, and God, it's okay. It's 6:30 almost, and still we have to give talks. But that is because these international collaborations, they are across the ocean. Okay, now where are we? We are actually in what is the largest experimental hall at CERN. That is a hall on surface, which contains something like 8 to 10 experiments in different beam lines, which are being serviced by the CERN proton synchrotron, which is a 400 GeV machine. And secondary beams are created for that. So what you see behind me, this goes about 400 meters deep and about 60 meters wide. This is the size of this hall which we have. And the concrete you see there, it's a lot of concrete. That is because we have different beam lines there which serve these different experiments and which have to be shielded because if they're operational, if hadron beams are not so healthy to be close to. Now, this hall was a bit shorter until like 5 years ago. And then there came an extension, and we are in this extension now, where they constructed the neutrino platform. I remind you that when I talked about that a week ago exactly or so, that this neutrino platform was actually created in 2015 as a response to the European strategy. And the idea of the neutrino platform is to have detector development here being done for neutrino experiments. Now, in particular, they had in mind already from the start to participate in the protodune experiments, the dune experiments, which you saw in Flavio's talk a little earlier, is a gigantic liquid argon TPC. And from our know-how of liquid argon TPCs, as we were in 10 years ago, it was clear we needed an extra step towards gigantic detectors, which were, like you saw, 20 by 20 by 60 meters, that is going to be in Sanford, in the mine in the US, in South Dakota, that we needed something in between, a step in between. So that step is what we have been building here over the last 4 years. These are the protodunes. And the protodunes are something by themselves, like a factor factor 25. So they are a 4% size scale of what actually is going to be needed for the dune experiment. So what you see behind me, there are, if you see well, there are these two red structures. One is close by, the other one is further away. These are two different protodunes for the two different technologies that were also discussed by Flavio in his talk there. And they are big. You don't see it so much from here, but we're going to go closer to them. And then you will see that they're real big. They're something like 8 by 8 by 8 meters cubes. And they are actually gigantic cryostats, normally filled with liquid argon. But today, especially for this visit, we emptied one of them so you can go inside. Actually, not true. This cryostat has been emptied quite a time before because it takes quite a long time, not only to empty them and actually fill them again. I see guide number 3 is around there. Do you want to show quickly Francesco as well to make the picture complete of all the guides? Francesco, say hi to the public in the camera with and Francesco is a world expert on liquid argon TPC. He was already in Icarus and so on, where became an expert at that. They always say that, you know, an expert, that's Carlo Rubbia, by the way, which you saw in the lectures from Flavio, who was introduced there, had an interesting definition of an expert. An expert, he said, is somebody who has made all his mistakes already. So we are confident Francesco has made that, probably didn't make a single mistake, I trust, but he's our expert. Okay, so what's going to happen now is that our team, we have two teams, our ground team, these are like the people who landed on the moon, they go down and they go actually close to the cryostats and they will explain what you see there. And with the ending point being going in one of the cryostats, as you will see. And we have here then a base team, which is flying around the moon as well. They are doing that. And they will keep control of your questions. If you have questions, we try to get answers for you. The expert questions on the protodunes are in the team there. So you ask them to these people, and more general questions we are happy to answer from here. So, team one, are you ready? All right, let's go. Let's follow that on the camera.
Live when we are inside, but that's one of the Kiro starts, one of the two that we have here. So this is during the construction phase. As you can see, everything in principle must be very clean. So the guys were wearing clean room stuff. And what the bottom of it takes into account that even inside, filled with liquid argon, we will have a temperature of something like 90 Kelvin, 88 Kelvin. And of course, everyone knows when you do something very cold, it starts to shrink. And the special shape, this cryostat, we have to limit the strain on the walls. And what you can see here on the side, so this is the insulation, something like 1 meter, a bit less than 1 meter. So a little bit less than 1 meter of a kind of foam. And the idea is that inside we have something like 90 Kelvin and outside we have room temperature. And this is what ensures that we are not evaporating all the liquid argon completely. And now I would say we go down and look at the cryostats, the real cryostats.
Cool. Do you want to get the other headset? Just I want to bring it with me just in case. We'll take it with and then I can turn it on or reconnect it later just in case.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's go. Take us on a tour.
You want to also to mention that there are other activities. Let's focus on the
just to say, so we are passing in front of the cryostat, which is called the NP04. So this is the, where the protodune phase one was happening in 2018. This is the proximity cryo plant that is connected to this cryostat. And then we are going to see something very similar on the other side. We're going to see NP02 and the proximity plant too.
Claire, just to say, we hear everybody only when they're close to the phone.
Okay, I'm going to turn back on that Bluetooth thingy. Give me a second. Hold on a second. All right, there you
go. Can you hear us?
Yeah, we hear you.
Yes, very good. Okay. We are passing close to the control room of MPO2, where all the computers.
So we should go a little bit closer so that clear can.
The computers you're thinking about? Yeah, we are talking about the requirement on the computer for data reconstructions, data acquisition, which is. Given the amount of throughput data that is close to what LHC are doing with a different approach, the amount of computer needed for data reconstruction, 3D reconstruction, and physics analysis is also considerable in terms of CPU times. And you will see here what this is used for, so to have quasi online.
I think it's a good idea.
So here we are in the control room of MPO2. MPO2 is the cryostat with that contains the TPC that was working in dual phase mode. Already introduced. Dual phase mode is the mode where all the interactions, all the things is happening in liquid phase, then electrons are extracted from the liquid phase to the gas phase where they are amplified. And the signal in principle should have been much improved, but other problem happened. So now this phase that is called has been canceled, and we are going to a different approach, which is a detector in single phase mode, but with vertical drift, which has several advantages from the constructions and commissioning point of view. This detector, we will see it later on the fly, but here we have the control room, and here you will see on the screen a lot of pictures of the detector. There are cryogenic cameras looking at relevant points inside the detector, the one that we are going to test with the next next experiment, which will happen in the next weeks. So the main point here is verify the high voltage distribution. The high voltage distribution requires going in cryogenic conditions at 300 kilovolt on the cathode, which was never been done, because attempted but never been done. On the single phase, we will see later, we reached 180 kilovolt in stable conditions. This is nearly a factor of two higher, and we have to prove that it is possible in stable conditions. What you see on one picture, like this one, for example, is the high voltage distributions that will give the voltage to the cathode. On the left of this picture, you see the field gauge of the detector. And on the other one, in green here, you see the support of the readout system of in this case, the readout system is still the what we call the dual phase mode, which is the dual phase mode. We will rerun in dual phase mode but with the main aim of checking the high voltage system and the new photon detector system as well.
But I think one should really stress, yeah. I mean, on this device, what you see here, there we will have 300 kilovolts, and 300 kilovolts is really a large voltage. It's in fact the highest voltage you can produce commercially. So, and this is in the clear start we are now showing you to you.
On this picture here, you see the bottom of the cryostat. You recognize the membrane that was described before. So this is the floor plus the walls on the side. And you see these tubes. These are the one where the pure liquid argon will be injected in order to fill the detector. So the injection will happen starting from Monday next week. At the moment, the cryostat has been cooling down. So at the moment, the floor is already at the temperature that is close to the one of liquid argon, so it's ready to be filled. While the top one is still slightly higher, but that's what to expect to happen. So if we were on Monday, you would see the fountain of liquid argon falling from this into the fall and then start filling it. It will take about 3 weeks to 4 weeks to fill completely the detector at the rate of about 20 tons per day.
Which already should tell you that this is a prototype. It's a big prototype, but it's only 8 times 8 times 8 meters, which means something like 700 tons of liquid argon. The final far detectors, which was described in the talk, this will be something like 17 kilotons in total, which means the filling should take a year.
Something like that, yeah.
So this is a long term.
1 year underground.
Underground, so this makes it even more complicated.
Much more difficult. The other important point to say, maybe it was mentioned already, that the argon has to be very pure. And very pure means something that you don't find in the world. So at the level of part per trillion, several part per trillion. As I was saying that before, one part per billion is a hair in a swimming pool. So if you have that, it will never, this detector will not work. So we have to keep purifying the argon. So the argon is one of the main issues of the big cryogenic system that we have outside, is exactly that, keep the argon pure by continuously recirculating the argon. So before, because of this, on one of the side of the walls, there is a special valve that is allows to make in contact a cryogenic pump with the liquid. So with this cryogenic pump that we maybe we can see, we keep sucking in the argon from the bottom at the level of 7 tons per hour. So it's a huge flux, which then is passed through specific filters for oxygen, water, CO2. And then it is re-injected into the liquid. And there are two recirculations to keep the purity at very, very high level. In protodune phase one and also double phase, we had purities that were world record at the level of 30 ppt. That calculate how many atoms of this it is. And we kept it stable like this for several months or years from that point of view. So also from that point of view, the detector was a success.
Well, that's also to say, you might have seen in the pictures that the photo or the video, what you see here, is not very sharp. In fact, it was sharp when everything was at room temperature. And what you see here is that everything is contracting, and it makes that the things becoming like difficult to see. But that's really just an effect of the cold when the cameras are starting to shrink. And okay, here you see another picture of the field cage. So the field cage, this is here the cathode. Here, that's the top. And okay, it's turned by 90 degrees. And here you can see rings. These are the field cage. And these rings are producing a homogeneous electric field between the cathode and the readout system. And that's very important if you want to drift the electrons and reconstruct the events, that it's a very homogeneous electric field. Okay, let's go. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, maybe so here, I think you can see it because there are all the shielding blocks, but behind the shielding blocks, so this is one of the tertiary beam lines. So actually is the one that you're seeing now is the one that is entering MP04. So behind it, you have the target. It is made, the part is made of copper, the other one is made of tungsten. Then you have all the magnets that are there for the selection of the momentum. And then at the moment the part of the beam pipe has been dismounted, so you can see everything and will be remounted at the end next year when we'll go in data taking again. So usually what we have from tertiary, so these are very low energetic particles up to 7 GeV, and these are all kind of particles like pions, electrons, and muons, and kaons.
And this allowed to do a very extensive and interesting data analysis on pions, cross-sections, on particle cross-sections. And this is important for neutrino physics to understand the interactions of all these particles with liquid argon, and of course the basic understanding for reconstructing neutrinos events at the correct energy range. Texas is restricted because below here we are filling with argon, as you have seen before. So now all this structure below us, we have about 200 degrees, minus 290 Kelvin already. So for these reasons, we have has to enter, also only authorized people can enter here. But here, maybe we can have a tour of all the systems that are already ready to be used.
Okay, let's start here. Yeah, I mean, okay. What you see here, in fact, that's the high voltage power supply. That's the one which provides up to 300 kilovolts. And then you have this very thick cable, which is protecting that you can touch it from outside, even if it's 300 kilovolts. And then you go inside with this Fritsu, and inside then you have the 300 kilovolts, which are for the cathode.
You need the level there if you can voltage as soon as the liquid is full.
We could because guess. Okay.
Claire, the video Hello? Is frozen. The video is frozen now. Your video connection is intermittent, I would say.
So maybe not to stay too long there, I think is fine, because the connection is not good from there.
We should show the manhole. Can you hear us?
Not clear. It's probably better to wrap up there and go down to NP04.
So, you hear me? Us?
I can. Yeah.
Okay.
Can you hear and see us?
I hear you.
Okay. Can you see us?
We see you.
Perfect.
You're going to land on the moon. So now they're on their way to the first cryostat, which we passed, and I hope they will give a nice view impression of this cryostat, which is actually embedded in the floor. You only see a top of the iceberg sticking out of here, but if you're in front of it, you will see it's quite impressive. Okay, folks.
Okay, and so at the bottom,
right now you're again frozen, so we can't see a video.
Okay, it looks like reception of the network is more tricky than it was 2 days ago when we tried.
Can you hear us?
Yeah, I hear you. But the video freezes from time to time.
Hey, I don't know if you guys can hear me because I'm on my other phone.
But if you can.
I hear you. We hear you well, Claire. At least I do.
I don't know. This is my phone. But anyway, okay. We're just going to go inside because there's a Wi-Fi router on the inside.
Yeah. If you have a way of showing the might of this protodune from down there, the dimension of it. Because you only see it well from down there.
How's that?
I'm not sure. It looks like your camera is frozen.
Let's go in.
Perfect.
Thank you.
So now you have to put the screw on.
Okay, while they are dressing up for the entering the cryostat, which is of course a clean room, and so they have to have special footwear and something. One question which I got is, where are the neutrinos? Where is the beam with neutrinos here in this hall? Well, there is no beam of neutrinos here in this hall. The thing we have is only beams of hadrons, and maybe in future, it could be that we will have a neutrino beam, a very special one, which calls Anubet, but that is still working on. So at this time, we don't have actually neutrino interactions in the protodunes when they are operational, except from maybe neutrinos which come from the sky, like atmospheric ones or so, but of course they are rare. Mostly we have muons seeing through it. But we do have, as was mentioned before, a hadron beam to the detectors for calibrating the response of liquid argon on hadronic interactions, which is going to be very, very important for tuning our Monte Carlos. So that is what we can do on the physics side. All right. Looks like they are getting dressed up.
Yeah, we are ready. Shall we? All right, wait, can you guys
it's
hear
over it? To you. I'm shutting oh, up from here. It's all yours.
Okay,
yeah.
So here you are inside the MP04 clean room. And actually, this is where we assemble the detectors before they enter the cryostat. So at the moment, we are at the we have removed most of the detectors of the phase one. So you can see part of the detectors here around. Then you can see the nacelle because we have to do some major interventions. This is the way a clean room is looking like. There you can see is a cold box, what we call a cold box. This is a really tiny cryostat where we test the detectors at low temperature, not as low as in the real cryostat. That is to make sure that there is no problem with the detectors before they are installed inside. And so you can see on the top, you can see a system of rails. So this is what we use in order to hang the detectors, and then they go around these rails. And so either you see they enter in the cold box if they have to be tested, or they can enter inside the cryostat. And actually here, behind here, you have the pit is where the detectors are lowered down via the train and arrive inside the clean room. So, here you can see the opening of the cryostat. We call it the temporary opening. So this cryostat was completely closed for the phase one. And then in order to remove the detector and start for phase two, we had to remove this part, which was quite a really job because it was never done before, in particular to remove everything from the outside, but everything was fine. So now the idea is that we go for phase two. The idea of phase two is that in phase one, we tested all the prototype detectors and everything went very well. But the idea is now that we want really to test the not the final detectors, but the installation procedures with the final detectors. So the detectors have been slightly improved, in particular on stability and reliability. Because you have to think that once this is closed, there is no way you can touch the detector. So it is even worse than bringing your detector on the space station, because there you might still do something. But here, there is no way. And actually, the These detectors have to work for 20, 30 years. There is no plan to empty and refill again the cryostat because this is going to take years. So it's really, you have to make sure that your detector is working perfectly. So now talking about detector, I pass the microphone to the expert. So we go in first. Okay. Okay, maybe here, if you show here, this is really what was shown already before on the top. So this is the outside, the external part of the cryostat. This is the mechanical support of the cryostat, which is holding all the pressure from inside for the liquid argon, from the gas, from the detectors, and from the forces, gravitational and seismic forces. Then you see the tertiary membrane that is also is somehow protecting this part of this volume of insulation where you have a nitrogen gas in order to avoid the condensation on the membrane. Then you see the insulation that you've seen before, and then you see the famous tertiary membrane with this corrugated style that is working like a 2D springs for all the movement due to the temperature variations.
So here we are inside the cryostat, and at the moment it only contains two major components. Not all the detector is there because these are the components of the old detector. We are going to replace them with the optimized ones and the final versions that are going to be installed in South Dakota for the horizontal far detector. So you see the height of the detector here is about 8 meters, inner detector 8 meter width, and so it's 8 by 8 by 8. On top is you see a structure made out of rails. So these rails are where all the detector is hanging from, and the rails itself, they are sustained on the outer structure, the outer red structure, with few fit rules that we could have seen from above after that. So beside the detector that we are going to maybe describe in some details, there are first important parts that are on the boundary of the detector that are meant to monitor the quality of the liquid argon and other important parameters like purity, temperature, pressure, and so on. And we can maybe have a go to that. Okay. Maybe one interesting thing is you see here the big hole that you see on top there. This is the manhole. So the detector itself is built, is inserted through the TCO that you have seen before where we entered. But once the detector is installed, opening is sealed, and then all the activity that have to be done to finish the detector are done by inserting people through the manhole, which is a 10 meter height. So one has to go up and down with a lifting machine. And so the last person that exits the detector is the one that has to be proud of. Here you see, for example, a column that supports temperature sensors all the way through. These temperature sensors are meant to better understand the fluid motion inside the detector. And this fluid motion is important because you want to have the detector response as homogeneous as possible. So if you have, for example, different purity depending on height, this is something that is not good for the detector. So studying the temperature gradients is a way to better understand the simulation and pinpoint the simulations of the fluid motions and for the purity, for example. So that's important from there. There are several of these columns in the detector.
And here you see instead a series of important detectors that are called purity monitors. These are small TPCs where the electron on the cathode are generated through photoelectric effect. So through fiber, so we inject ultraviolet light. This light is used on a photocathode made of gold to extract electrons. Then one measures the electrons that are leaving. And there is an anode later on. You measure the amount of electron reaching the anode, and the ratios of the two gives you the attenuation and the purity in, related to that. And so this is a very quick method, but very, very effective to follow the purity, which is used for during filling if something happens, but also during detector operation, because that's a way to calibrate the attenuation length inside the detector.
So, yeah, exactly. So now we go to the, I think, the main detector element of the TPC is the wire chain. These are called APA. Plane assembly, sorry. Thank you. And if you go very close to that, you will see they are made out of four wire planes on one side, then a mesh, and then another four wire planes on the other side. The four wire planes are used, you see wires running in different directions in order to get several views of the same event. Okay. Several views of the same, several 2D views of the same event, which then can be used to reconstruct the event in 3D by knowing that the common coordinate is the drift time. So by associating each of the hits to the time, you can reconstruct the event in 3D. This can be done on single tracks by eye, but if you have more complex event, you need a huge computing power to find the correct associations between each of various components. What is important here as well is that what is not present here, but inside this frame here, and you have several of these frames all around, there is place for photon detectors. Photon detectors are meant to collect the scintillation light produced by ionizing particles. This is a ultra UV, so this is very deep UV light. So there are special detectors that are called Arapuca, which means traps in Portuguese, which are read out by silicon PM and are especially made to have a large surface and able to a small amount of silicon PM in order to be able to collect over wide area the 4 pi light that is emitted. And this is triggered, this is used, probably you have already heard, to for triggering purposes and also for T0, for localizing events within the drift. So the other element for to define the detector is the cathode. This is the panel on which the high voltage is placed. And in this specific configuration, we have about 3.5 meter drift, and which means that on the cathode, we have to apply 180 kilovolts more or less in order to have the nominal electric field of 500 volts per centimeter, which is used applied to liquid argon. So that's also a specific object that has been invented for protodune, which is made out of resistive material, which allows to mitigate any possible sparks that could happen because of the fact that this is a very high voltage. And that was also very successful. What you can see in all that is that everything is modular. So we don't have a single wire plane. We have several. Here you see two, but there were six of them. The cathode as well. Here you see four. There were six. And also they're made modular. And the modularity is defined by the maximum width dimensions of the object that you can download in the cavern underground in South Dakota. So the size is 6 meter times 2.3. That's the maximum for the APA, for example. And you have to imagine that the far detector will have the double in height of this. So twice as much in height of the two. And in terms of length, so here there were three wire planes, one after the other. In the far detector, there will be 25. So, and four layers of those. So we'll have four drift like the one that you see here.
Anything else? No, I think the only thing is that we should mention a bit. I mean, since we are in a cryostat, now we are still a little bit lucky and the TCO is open. And the TCO is open, so we have still a little bit more exchange of air. But especially when this is closed and we are just here from the manhole, then of course there's a danger that we have no oxygen anymore left here. So always when we are in this cryostat, we have to wear our oxygen meter to check that we are above 18% of oxygen. Because 18, then it starts to be critical.
Okay. And maybe before any question appear, this APA is completely broken. You see that the wires are not like the other one. You will see a lot of broken wires. And this is because after it has been used, the engineers want to understand if there were any weak points. Yeah, you can put the finger in.
Yeah, you see that here is completely broken.
But that was used as a test case. So they want the engineer that built this TPC recently came back to CERN to understand if there are any weak point and what could have been done to improve the construction of this system. And for these reasons, you see that the poor TPC APA has been really abused. but that's okay. This was for a noble cause. Yes, exactly.
All right.
By the way, if there are questions, you can always put them on the chats and then we can try to answer them while they're in the cryostat or coming out.
So if you have questions, Daniela and myself will have to answer everything. Good luck with your meeting. Don't leave me alone. Other questions?
Yeah, so at the moment, the APAs are not covering the full width of the detector. I assume in the final configuration, they will cover the full width, both the APAs and the cathode plane. Is that correct? Or am I misunderstanding?
Excuse me, could you repeat the question? Like? Sorry, I didn't hear the first part.
So at the moment, the APAs are not covering the full width of the detector. I assume in the final configuration, they will. Or is that understanding incorrect?
I think you mean that this is not completely covered because these are, in general, we had three APAs on this side and three on the other side. We are removing the APAs. So we remove everything but these two because we had to check something on that. And then we will remove them. But it's true that it's covering the whole surface.
Okay, thank you.
And just if you see all these tiles, I mean, one of my students, which should be connected, in fact, he should remember that we were in this cryostat and we had to clean every single tile for the reasons which Francesco said before, with alcohol on our knees to make it really clean so that this detector works. So if you want to do experimental physics and with such a big detector, sometimes you have very nasty jobs to do to be successful.
So Thorsten, you think you're attracting students now or
what? I want to prepare them for the reality.
will that need to be redone before the cryostat is closed again?
I guess so. That this is the job which has to be done. Because any dust, but it's a little bit less job probably now than normally. One has also to say here, this is a single phase and we have a horizontal drift. So from the left to the right. In this case, if you have some material which is floating, it goes up and no, you have no problem. I mean, it's out of the readout plane. You still should avoid it if possible, but it's a little bit less critical.
In the other phase, we have this dual phase, or also the vertical drift. There we have the readout on the top. So everything what is floating is exactly ending in your readout system.
All right, guys, let's see if there are some questions. Otherwise, you may be slowly thinking of coming in a more oxygen-rich environment outside the cryosat before we lose you completely.
So there is a question on the chat by Corbinian. Do you want to ask it yourself, Corbinian? Yeah, you're unmuted. I think you can just talk.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Now we can hear you, yeah.
Okay, sorry. I was just curious on where all the parts are produced. For example, are these APAs or these wires detectors, are they produced here on site or externally?
So the APAs are partly produced in UK and partly produced in USA. But I mean, the detector is this is an international collaboration. So really the parts of the detectors are really becoming from all over the world, so from the collaborator institutes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other question?
I don't see any on the chat at the moment. Feel also free to raise your hand in case you have a question. Okay, so there are no questions for the moment.
Okay, then we stop.
Yeah, maybe you can, while you're on your way out of the cryostat again, maybe more questions will still appear. Yeah.
Okay, I think you can come back. That's good.
Okay.
Maybe you can say a few words about the protective equipment you've been wearing, because as far as I understand, it's not really a clean room down there, but you still can't just walk in with your street shoes, right?
Okay, so this is a clean room. So we have to avoid to, as much as we can, to bring inside dirty things. So at the moment, since we have dismounted more or less everything, is not really clean. It's clean, but not as much as we would like to have. But still, you have to wear cover shoes to enter. Then at certain point, when the detectors will be in, you will also wearing the white coat to enter, because you really, I mean, really dust is the worst thing so we can bring into this detector. I mean, I think you understood how important is the purity for the physics.
Can you maybe say a few words about what you do during operation to keep the argon pure? I'm sure there's some purification going on continuously, or am I mistaken about this? Yeah, we briefly lost the connection as they are moving from one Wi-Fi hotspot to the other. So the question was about online purification. So while the experiment is running, I'm sure you have some systems to purify the argon continuously. Is that correct?
Uh,
Yes, hold on. We're just moving and we will answer that question when we get to the top and into better signal. So if you just wait like 2 more minutes and then you can ask the question again.
Okay, so the question was about
purification.
I'm sure
you're continuously purifying the
art. That incorrect.
Yes, when we are in operation, we are continuing purifying the liquid argon, the gaseous argon, which is also then condensed into liquid. And I think, if I remember well, the turnover is something like 5 days. So every 5 days, we really purified the whole 750 tons of our liquid argon.
How does this work, the purification?
Okay, I just wanted to add one point. We cannot purify everything. So there are some materials like nitrogen, which you cannot remove because it's inert. Oxygen, for example, and other reactive materials is easy to remove. It's still an effort, but nitrogen, if it goes into, it stays inside.
And how do we purify? Okay, I'm not an expert, but there is a purification system with a number of filters. I don't know if you know more about this.
I mean, there are different materials, which when you heat them up, for example, or just because copper, for example, it oxidizes. So when you are having a lot of liquid nitrogen, argon going through it with oxygen, it oxidizes the copper and things like this. So you have special materials which react with the oxygen and in this way remove it from the system.
Okay, thank you.
All right, guys, you can come back, I think. We are past our time. As I hope you hear me. One thing which may be interesting for you to see is, or to realize, is that these technologies are used and were particularly pushed for neutrino experiments, but they also got very popular for other parts in science, for example, for dark matter searches. And in particular, one collaboration called DarkSight is using liquid argon as well, much more purified than what we are doing here, because you know, they look for minimum signals or so. But there is an idea of that perhaps these crystals, as we have them here, or similar ones, could become very big dark matter experiments. And with, of course, the necessary investments and things like we have to do. But there are other applications for that. And there are more plans for detectors, other purposes also being looking at the liquid argon food technology.
But you see, I mean, most of the things are behind the blocks.
I'm afraid there's not much we can see. Yes. I mean, what you cannot see is simply a set of magnets which are focusing the different particles so that they enter. There's a special window in this in the cryostat where the particles can enter and then leave a track inside. In fact, you see there one of these magnets, but unfortunately, that's roughly everything what you can see. Yeah, and back there you see the window. Exactly. That's from the. Okay. Yes, the point, the beam is pointing down. This is simply because of the geometry, which is possible in this place. But it has no deeper meaning in the sense. And the beam should be shooting more or less in the middle between the cathode and the upper, the anode. Okay, we are back at the starting point. Are there any last questions for the moment to anybody of us? Otherwise, I'm pretty sure you can also send an email or, and we can answer also later. If there's anything where you say, I would really like to know it.
Yes, I. Okay.
Okay.
Any last questions to round?
But we can do it probably from yours. I see no further questions. Joachim in the control center, no questions. Bibush has backup, no questions. Okay, good. Then
we're on.
Bye.
And yeah, we've got Adamos in case you have any.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you left the thing.
No, the mic is dead, this one.
Yeah,
use this one.
All right, so let's try that again. Thank you guys for joining us on this tour. In fact, you guys are the very first virtual tour inside the Cryostat ever done. So apologies for the sound, but I think we have to cut short because the battery in this microphone is off.
Best to say, tomorrow Friday, see you again, 3 o'clock. Bye.
Bye.
Bye from the team. I don't know if they can see the team. All right. If you want to say bye, you can say bye now. Thanks. Thanks a lot. And we lost Francesco. This is still in the.
Oh, yes, another meeting.
Ah, okay. I thought we left him in the cryostat. Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.